Welcome to Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry. From Europa, 1945 to 2030, to Ergo, Eurogames, to Catalyst Game Labs. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is August 27th, 2010. You like that? I got Europa and Eurogames, right? Like a double E.
That was pretty good. I was figuring your tongue was going to, you know, lock up there.
Yeah. By the way, if anyone wants to know why Eurogames went under, I recommend finding a copy of Europa 1945 to 2030. In a word, blech.
Well, that's a good summation.
I've never seen more meeples in a game serving really less of a fun purpose. But anyways... I want to apologize to all of our listeners. I'm on the road this week, and I did not trust either Delta's baggage handlers or the TSA to my really nice condenser mic. So I'm using my headset portable earpiece thing, and I'm terrified what it's going to sound like. So again,
fishbowl.
What's that?
Fishbowl. You sound like you're in a fishbowl.
Great. Yeah, it doesn't help that I'm in a giant echo chamber of a room. But anyways, hey, after apologizing for the crummy quality of the podcast, let's mention our sponsorship this week. Our sponsorship, as usual, purplepawn.com. And Rhett, we've got a short news segment this week. Not much going on. I think everyone's taking a big, deep breath in after Gen Con and before we get into the fourth quarter. But we've got a great interview with Zev Schlesinger of Z-Man Games. We're going to talk about his blog post last week on Board Game Geek that made some waves. And we've also got a really great piece of reader mail from Daniel in Sweden. Did I say that right? Sweden.
Sweden.
Yeah. I'll blame the mic. Anyway.
Sweden.
Yes. Sweden. Yeah. Yes, the poor guy. Thank you for listening to the show, Daniel. We apologize. Our Swedish is much worse than your English, trust me. And on that note, let's move right into the news. Or should I say new? We really only have one
story. We have two.
We do have two. This is from the purplepawn.com. Netflix for board games. Board Game Exchange is a board game borrowing system. It's not cheap, but you get to try the games out. All shipping costs are free, and you can pay to keep a game at a discounted rate if you like it. And some of the games are of the rare, expensive variety. This sounds like a really cool idea. And, you know, we've been talking about libraries introducing games as part of their collection, not just having people play games at the library. Right. I think this is an interesting system. I honestly don't know that it's a huge moneymaker. But if you're the kind of game player who really wants to demo a game before you buy it, I think this sounds great.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept behind it. I'm not sure about the expenses and everything else. Shipping games is not like, you know, Netflix, which is drop it in the mail and it costs you 12 cents. I exaggerate slightly since nothing in the mail costs 12 cents.
No, it's a good point. I mean, if you're shipping a 6-pound copy of... a Fantasy Flight Dust Tactics, that's an issue. And I'm certain that's why the membership, you know, costs are high and the shipping costs are free, because that's going to balance out with Bonanza, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, games have price ranges and, you know, mass all over the place as far as that's concerned for shipping purposes. Yes. And, you know, do you trust the U.S. Post Office?
Well... it is what it is. You know, the thing that I'd like to point out, though, is that, one, we're going to put a link to this in the show notes because I do think it's a neat idea. But two, you know, if you ship, you know, I'm going to say this, to have an inventory of games, right, of any size is not a cheap endeavor. So I have to think that someone has thought this out and has given it a go. And, you know, and basically already has the games. The problem with the game is once somebody opens it, you can't really resell it. So I'm going to guess they're banking on keeping the game at a discounted rate as their main revenue for this project.
I would think so, because you're absolutely right. I mean, as soon as the game's punched, it's pretty much done. I mean, it's not new.
Yes. And ask me how I know, but used games that are currently in print with all the counters punched aren't worth much.
No.
Yeah. So, hey, moving on, our next major news story.
Womp, womp, womp.
I know. We We need major. You know, we haven't had any TRU news in a while, so we can't use the theme. But
aren't they bankrupt? Just joking, TRU.
No, they remember they're going public. So
I know.
Yeah, they'll bank so they can bankrupt someone else.
Yeah.
Axis and Allies 1940:Europe just came out. And you know, this kind of ties into what we're going to talk to Zev a little bit about having, like, when is too many games too many games?
Yeah, I got to go along with you there. I mean, I'm a fan of the original Axis and Allies going back to the Nova Games version. This current version is hideously huge. The two games combined, Pacific and Europe, the board's 6 foot by 6 foot. You know, it's a dining table monstrosity. And
but it's so cool.
It is cool. I was just a bit confused when I was trying to figure out how many players the current edition is.
Yeah.
It shows 6 positions, but it only lists 5 different nationality trays. So I'm thinking maybe the French and the Americans get linked.
Quite possibly. It would certainly make sense on a 1940 game.
Right.
The thing is that I know a lot of people took a pass on D-Day, okay? And, you know, because really we've had a lot of Axis and Allies come out. We've had Axis and Allies Pacific, Axis and Allies Guadalcanal, Axis and Allies D-Day, Axis and Allies, 100th Anniversary Edition, Axis and Allies 1940. Really, all I can see with this, I see them, they can do an East Front game, they can do a North Africa game, and then we're on to Fortress America, because really we're done with World War II.
Yeah, yeah. Am I really that old? Did they really do a 100th anniversary edition?
I couldn't remember if it was the anniversary of the war or the anniversary of the game. Suffice to say that it was an anniversary edition. It was lavishly produced and very nice.
Yes, it was a beautiful game.
But again, how many Axis and Allies games is too many?
Absolutely. And to answer that question,
yes,
or perhaps not at least Axis and Allies, but and as a general question.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'm going to preface this interview where, by the way, my sound quality will be better. I recorded this yesterday with Zev of Z-Man Games. And a little background, Zev posted on BoardGameGeek.com on one of the forums last week, and he said, "Am I making too many games?" Now, we've talked a lot on this show about the dangers of being a single game company. We haven't necessarily talked about the dangers of being, you know, having too many games. It doesn't come up as much. But, you know, my initial take on the subject is, are you making your target amount on the games you produce? And that's really my criteria on whether or not you have too many games out.
Yeah, I would have to go along with that. And, you know, the same thing applies on, I think, we can get into it at a later point, miniatures lines, the size of miniatures lines. What is too much?
But anyway, Zev has a slightly different take on it, so let's talk to Zev Slashinger of... We're here with Zev Slashinger of Z-Man Games. Zev, thank you for taking the time to be on the show.
My pleasure. Good morning.
And the reason we wanted to have you on the show is you posted something on Board Game Geek that seems to – everyone in my game group was talking about it. There's a ton of comments on the thread as well. And the subject is, am I coming out with too many games? And
yes.
Now, we've talked on the show before, not you and I, but Rhett, my co-host, who's currently working. But we've talked a lot about the dangers of being a single game company. And now you're coming from the opposite direction. You're saying, am I coming out with too many games? So I guess my big question is, are you coming out with too many games? Do you feel like there's too many games? Or, you know, what led you, I guess, to post that and ask the question?
Well, I mean, it stemmed from, you know, some posts that I had seen online about the possibility of too many games crowding the scene. I mean, first of all, there's the context of there have been people who have mentioned that altogether there's just too many games being published, mm-hmm. you know, in a year, you know, 400, 500, 600 games a year. I mean, that's a lot of games. So obviously I'm guilty of contributing because I'm putting out about, you know, 25, 30, 35 games for this year at least. So the question, you know, I came up with talking with friends, listening to people online, and, you know, people coming up to me at conventions and stuff and listening to the comments that they're making, which is, you know, am I coming out with too many games? Why? Because there are people who are fans of Z-Man games that, you know, want all or most of my product line. Mm-hmm. But if I offer, you know, 30 games, that's a big hit to the wallet there. So, you know, that's why I started questioning it. And it came out more as a rhetorical thing to answer, you know, some people's concerns about it. And I just wanted to, I guess just to show people where I was coming from. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the idea, am I coming out with too many games? Possibly. Although, if you look to most of the answers on the threads, the answer is no, which I find very heartening. It's more, you know, there are cash flow issues, of course. I think the one positive what people had said is that since I don't do the same kind of game, so I'm not in a way cannibalizing my sales because I'm doing so many different things and I'm appealing, you know, that I'm appealing to so many different people and, you know, and so many different types of gamers that I'm not hurting myself that way. And there are some overlap and probably, you know, yeah, I probably do lose some sales here and there or I'd make them up in the future. I think my main concern is, am I, you know, are some games being overshadowed by other games? I think that might be my major concern, where that also obviously affects sales. You know, for example, for every, you know, for every person anticipating, let's say, Merchants and Marauders, you know, they're doing...
you got me pegged, yeah.
Yeah. you know, are they going to know, you know, Onerim when it's available? Mm-hmm. You know, are they going to care about it? Are they going to miss it? And so on and so forth. So that's... I think that's possibly one of my biggest fears. I mean, of course, you know, yeah, cannibalizing sales is a possibility. You know, cash flow is a possibility. But it's more, you know, is something that's good going to be overlooked because it's coming out in a sea of, you know, other releases?
Well, now that's something that had occurred to me as well, is that your game catalog is very broad. We have everything from the Scurvy Musketeers, the B-movie card games, to games like Agricola. And these aren't the same game, right? These are competing on two different, you know, in two different, you know, niches in the product marketplace. On the other hand, three games a month is a lot to support marketing wise, is what it seemed to me. It seemed like in order for you to push a game, it takes a lot of time. And at three a month, you know, regardless of cash flow or anything else, you're right. It's real easy for something to get lost if you can't focus on it.
Well, let me just talk one thing about marketing. I know people have talked about it. I mean, I've been in the business. You know, we celebrated our 10th year anniversary at Gen Con.
Yes, thank you for the T-shirt.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you got one. and the thing is, you know, the face from when I first started, the face of where you can market has changed. And I think that... it's a term, you know, I know people are familiar with advertise, but the thing is there's not many places to advertise in the board game industry.
No, well, there's certainly no print magazines left, yeah.
No, there's no more print magazines, really. I mean, you have a distributor, one, you know, like Game Trade Magazine,
right.
Another distributor, ACD, has their thing, but they're basically telling you what's coming out, you know, in the new releases. So really, the only marketing that can be done is, you know, are places like, well, there's podcasts, of course,
right.
But there's, you know, Board Game Geek, you got banners, you know, Board Game News, you put a banner. Fortress Ameritrash, you put a banner. That's really it. And there's, you know, maybe a few others. And I think, you know, the War Gamers have, like, Counter Magazine and some other things. But, you know, those are, I think, very specific. So in terms of, you know, if I come out with one game or 20 games, I mean, to me, it's just a matter, at least my perception is, well, either I come up with one banner or 20 banners. So it's yeah. Not, you know what I mean? I don't think marketing is an issue in this case because there's not, you know, it's not like I have to say, oh, well, I have, you know, $1,000 print advertising, and so I can only do one ad in a magazine and not 20 for each game, because there is nothing like that. It's just banners. So, you know, I think marketing is just so different nowadays that I don't know if that is a, you know, if that is the right thing to say that, you know, to go against coming out with so many games, because there's really not much marketing you can do. And of course, I mean, I got my website as well, but again, I push my games on my website. I tell people what's shipping, what's releasing. Mm-hmm. They got the pictures on the front page. I got links to the pages so you can read about the game and download rules. But again, if it's one game or 20 games, does it really matter? Somebody, you know, if they go on my site, they'll just, you know, scroll down the list and, you know, see what's interest them and, you know, click through and, mm-hmm. and go from there. So, yeah, I think marketing is just, and the last thing is conventions. And I go to all the big conventions and I go to some smaller conventions. So that's where I do marketing. I put my games out on the table and people see what's coming out. So I think that my answer to marketing, it's kind of, you know, I don't know if it's a viable answer anymore.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I don't know
if I've explained it properly. I'm not a business guy or a business degree guy or whatever, and I never took marketing courses or anything, but it just seems that for our industry, it's just a different animal and it doesn't work.
Well, the channels have certainly narrowed to, you know, you have online advertising and then in-store demos and convention appearances. Those are really, I would say, the big three.
Correct. And we do have a Z-Force program. So we do have an in-store demo program. We have people going to their local stores and they demo one or two games a month. So that's also, you know, there's your marketing as well. But again, if they come out with one game or 20 games, sure, they're still going to do about two or three a month, but they can do the newest releases. You know, I go, hey, this month we're coming out with these games, so focus on these games. So people do get a hit on the newest games, you know, barring, mm-hmm. you know, one or two games if I come out with too much that month.
So let me ask you this. How many, I guess if 25 or 30 feels like it might be too many, what do you think is your target for 2011?
Well, considering that I was telling people I wanted 17 to 20 games for 2010, I'd like to say if I could keep it to about 17 to 20 games mm-hmm. for 2011, that'd be great. But, you know, at this point, you know, and also based on the answers I've been seeing or whatnot, and really what people are saying, if it works for me, why change it? I mean, the only thing is, can I handle it? You know, because I'm one guy, I'm juggling all these balls in the air. You know, can I do it? You know, that's what it comes down to, and is it making money? So while I'll say, sure, I'd love to keep it to 17 to 20 games, but you know what? If 2010 comes out to be a great year, you know, I just might do whatever I need to do for 2011, you know, come out with the games that I want and, mm-hmm. you know, I already pushed some games from 2010 into 2011.
Right.
So already that list is growing. You know, I think I got about 10, 12 games already, you know, and I'm not even nearly, you know, done with 2011.
Now, do you have formula? Do you have a formula for what your mix of games is going to be for a year? Do you say, you know what, I'm going to do, you know, five or six of the big Euro type production, and then say 10 of the smaller card games, that kind of thing? Or do you have any kind of a plan for that? Is it just, you know, I've got these great designs; these are the ones I'm going to go with.
It's that one. You know, it's more. I mean, it's something that, you know, I like, and, you know, I played it, and I think, oh, this would be great, and, yeah, you know, let's come out with it. I mean, the only time I might, like, I turned down some space games, but then again, I wasn't going to do them because I had, like, three space-themed games already in my, you know, coming out of my catalog. Mm-hmm. I had Perry Rodan, I was doing Ascending Empires, and then Battle Beyond Space. So when people were sending me others, I was already turning them away, so I was being strong-willed and saying no, you know, even if it sounded very cool or different, I was like, no, I got three coming out in, you know, within a space of a year, so I don't want to look at any others.
Right.
So in that way, yeah, if I'm already doing a lot of the same themes, I'll probably just nix it right there. But otherwise, no, I don't say, okay, I need to come out with, you know, X, you know, $10 card games and X, you know, $25 medium games and so on and so forth. I don't think that way. It's more, this is what I like. I think it should come out. You know, I'm going to try to get it out, you know, when I can.
Excellent. Well, Zev, like I said, I'm waiting for Merchants and Marauders, so hopefully that's not one of the ones you pushed back.
No, at least not intentionally. So far, it's still on track for 2010. Don't know when. I mean, we're hoping to get some advanced copies for Essen, and it's a possibility. It's a possibility that might happen. But other than that, you know, it could be November, December. But so far, that has a good possibility for 2010.
Yay. Well, before I leave you, I have one more question, and that's something you said. If 2010 turns out to be a good year, we're coming up, we're about 30 days away from the start of the fourth quarter, which is, you know, obviously insane for the mass market. In the hobby market, it's not quite as insane, but are you fourth quarter driven, or is it just a nice bump, or How important is that going to be for you to have a successful
2020? Well, it's a nice bump. I mean, to me, I look at the, you know, I try to premiere things at the three major shows, Origins, Gen Con, and Essen, mm-hmm. and then probably try to have something new for BGGCon as well. But sometimes Essen releases work there because, you know, a lot of people who don't go to Essen, they're BGGCon, and they're, you know, picking up Essen releases there. So I really try for, let's say, those four games. So you got Origins, Gen Con, Essen, and BGGCon. I try to have new stuff there.
Right.
It's, I guess, you know, because of quarter four, you know, Essen and BGGCon fall in quarter four, so I guess that would be the thing. But it's not the insane thing. I'd rather summer is probably the busiest thing because you have Origins and Gen Con. So those are probably the two, you know, biggest, you know, places where I try to have new games and so on and so forth. So it's really, but the thing is, because I do a lot of co-productions and also licensing, the quarter four does tend to be filled with a lot of games because of, again, not only releasing at BGGCon at Essen, but because a lot of my partners are releasing stuff for Essen and right after. So I get hit with a lot of, you know, games for that quarter because of those issues.
Conveniently, right before Christmas, one hopes.
Well, yes, right, yes.
You know, so.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely right. You know, I mean, you'll see, you know, people on their Secret Santa list and want lists and stuff like that. But yeah, Christmas does make a nice spike in sales, and some of the games that are hot, you know, they do get a spike in sales because, you know, distributors want to make sure they have them in stock and, you know, so on.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Zev, you being the one man army that you are, I will let you go. Thank you very much for being on the show, and like I said, best of luck in 2011 on the. On the stuff. I'm not going to be at Essen, unfortunately, but sadly won't make it across the pond. But again, interesting dilemma to have. Like I said, I've dealt with a lot of people just starting out in the industry and just getting that first game out the door.
Right.
And so it's kind of neat to see someone who's grown big enough to say, "Oof, man, I might have too many." So again, best of luck, and we hope to hear
Thank
from you,
you
soon.
You got it. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was our interview with Zev Slazenger of Z-Man Games. Again, Zev, thanks for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And really loved my Z-Man t-shirt that I got at Gen Con. I had to plug that with Zev. So
nice.
I'm going to keep thanking him because, you know, we don't really do game reviews, so I can't, you know, pimp for game copies for everybody, but maybe he'll send me another t-shirt if I thank him enough.
That would be nice. I did not receive anything like that from anyone.
I had to buy a game to get it, but that's
okay. Well, I didn't have to buy anything to get any of my, or not get anything, so.
That's right. Well, the swag bag at Gen Con this year, we didn't talk about it. Attendance was up at Gen Con this year, but it wasn't because of the swag bag.
Oh, that's for sure.
In fact, they should just stop putting it in a bag. They should put it in an envelope.
It was very strange this year.
It was, yeah, slim pickings would be the best description. Anyways, let's move into listener mail. And we have a long letter this week from Daniel in Sweden. And Daniel raises a bunch of really good questions. So it's probably good that it was a slow news week. So let me race through his letter. And Rhett, and then we'll kind of talk about this. We'll try and address all of his questions. Daniel here. I have a question regarding choosing a game to publish. First of all, I am a game designer, and I am currently thinking of self-publishing. My question to you is, how do you choose what game to publish? The way I've initially gone about it is with a low production cost game, a card game with no components except cards. This is to minimize the initial gambling, quote-unquote, right? We talked about that with Plankton Games, the big bet. And the possible losses. Is this the wrong way to go? Is there a way to pre-evaluate your games? Parentheses, I live in Sweden, so going to game fairs and talking to publishers is not really an option. The only game fair I visited is Spiel in Essen, and it is more sales-oriented, so there's not much time to chit-chat. I also have a question regarding using PSI. I've recently started to listen to your podcast, but I get the feeling you do not like the idea of using a company like PSI. Why is this, or did I get it wrong? The initial impression I have of them is that it seems a good way of starting out. Yes, you only make something like 34% of the retail price, but selling to distributors, you're expected to sell the games at 40% anyway. At least that's the figures I have found on the web. And insofar as I understand, PSI handles all shipping at no extra cost. So it doesn't sound like such a bad way for a new publisher, and if so, why? Or is this such a bad way to go for a new publisher? And finally, I also have a question regarding marketing your game. You mentioned giving the shops a demo copy of your game. Do you do that to everyone, or is it more of a buy 6 or 12 or whatever number your games come in and get a free demo copy for your store? And also, except giving review copies to different podcasts, is there another good and cost-effective way to market your board game? Oh, wait, there's one more question. Oh, and do you have any general tips to an aspiring self-publisher, like, do not miss this, or this is a must-do if you're not to be doomed? Best regards, Daniel. P.S. Love the show and the way you can take a topic that is, to me, completely not interesting and make it interesting.
No, that's a great ending.
That is.
How do you not get read on the air with that as your ending?
Yes. So we're it's completely not interesting, but we make it interesting. So yeah, next week we'll talk about the IRS 1040 form here in the United States. Anyways. Daniel, these are all really good questions. Let me take the easy one first, which is PSI. We're not against PSI. It is something you have to be aware that when you use a sub-distributor that sells into another distributor, you're going to make less money. This means you have to have either a really tight control on your production costs, a.k.a. you're keeping those production costs at about 15% or less, or you're willing to take less money to get the game out of the market. Right? Am I wrong on that?
No. I'm surprised we've actually given that concept of, that we didn't like PSI. I think PSI does a very good job at what they do.
I would totally agree to that. And in fact, I was going to agree with you. When I first read the letter, I thought, really? I didn't mean to sound negative about PSI.
Yeah. They're a good company. As I say, I guess we both think that they do a really good job. As far as what they do, I think they also have some advantages over a few other places. At least with PSI, they seem to be able to get you into book trade a lot easier.
Yes. If you're going into book trade, if you want to go into book trade and you're small, PSI is the way to go.
Yeah, because they will bundle you, so to speak, with all the other people out there that they
correct.
Have.
Correct. Absolutely correct. And now, Rhett, you can probably address the question about demo copies better than I can.
Well, the demo copy things are I think it's really more of a choice, what your expenses and everything else. I mean, shipping from Sweden or wherever it is you end up shipping can be a completely different position than if you were looking for a U.S. market and shipping from the U.S. As far as the top people for retail and such to give out demo copies, if you handed out something like at the Gamma Show, a demo copy to everybody was going there, you'd probably get a decent response from people who will demo the game. I do like the Baker's Dozen concept of, you get 13 games, 11 or 12 of them are for sale, and the last one is for demo. We get that with...
The most recent company to do that, by the way, is Looney Labs is doing that for Back to the Future.
Yeah, and I believe there's also going to be Sandstorm was talking about doing something along those lines as well.
Oh, so I can get more poo?
You can get more poo. As a matter of fact, from what I understand, there is extra poo and poo this time.
Excellent.
So,
anyways, yeah. So, and honestly, some of the established companies, Z-Man Games is one of them, and he mentions this. They do have demo teams, right? They do have groups, volunteers around the country who basically, for the price of the demo game, will demo it at the local store for you.
And those work out really well. And I would say the best example of that is people who started this whole grassroots demo concept is AEG. AEG took the Legend of the Five Rings card game into what was pretty much not anything beyond Magic. There really no one had ever established themselves other than Magic in that market. They passed out tons of this on the West Coast and then proceeded to send it out along the rest of the country. It's the only other game right now that has ever really lasted. They and Magic are the only collectible card games that continue to do reasonably well.
Yes, that aren't a flash-in-the-pan license type.
Yeah, and again, that was pretty much because of grassroots demoing. Like I say, there are at least three approaches, which is you can get it out to the retailers and hope that they will do it. You can, in a couple of different ways, one is like, as I say, you can send it out directly to them or you can include it as part of your package for multiple units.
Yeah, my only advice on demo copies, Rhett, by the way, I'm gonna jump in on you for a second, is if you say you only print 1,000 games, don't give out 300 demo copies because you just gave out all of your profit. But yes.
Yeah, I mean, it really does come down to, your a level of marketing. It's part of your marketing expenses, and if you calculate it as part of your marketing expenses, I think you're taking the right step there.
Yes. And now let's talk about his other questions here, which is, how do you choose what game to publish? How do you minimize the initial gamble? And then also the general tips for an aspiring self-publisher. This is a must-do if you're not doomed. Daniel, you're doomed anyway. You're in the game industry. That said, the thing to think about here is, one, just like in Vegas, never gamble more than you can afford to lose. All right, the game business is not risk-free, right? So don't take out a second mortgage on your home, or a third or a fourth. If you can't afford to, if this game belly flops, you have to be able to walk away from it. That's just absolutely the bottom awful line on when you're self-publishing.
And I think that applies to all business, not just, you know, self-publishing
100%,
games.
100%.
Any kind of business you're going into.
Yes, but it is a risk. So the idea of picking a low-cost card game to minimize that initial gamble is a good idea. What you don't necessarily want to do is pick one that's not your best idea.
Yeah, that's going to definitely be my suggestion, which is, you know, if you have a stable of products that you're looking at, I always say put your best foot forward. You get one shot to make a first impression.
Yes.
You know, if your first impression is Fantasy Flight and what you produce is Twilight Imperium, everybody remembers you.
Yes. No, I was just going to say that there is obviously, as is always, a gray area of judgment here. And that if you have a low cost card game that's going to cost you $2.50 to manufacture, okay, and you can sell it for $10 or $12, versus your other really great idea is Dust Tactics, okay,
yeah,
which is going to cost you $30 a unit, and you'll have to sell it at $100 to manufacture. There's a big difference in what you're going to want to lead with, right? You can shoot all your guns off on the big game, but if it doesn't go, you're done. So there is some gray area on that. But yeah, to minimize the initial gamble, what you want to do is have one good game out there, get a buzz going on it, and then get your second one out the door. Right. I mean, that is the best way to establish your game company is to get the first one out, get a positive response, get the second one out to boost sales on the first one, and then keep things going from there.
Yeah, I think you would be better served if you can do follow-ups. You know, one of the things we've talked about, and there's a few companies out there who have been successful with the first product and not been able to do a follow-up for a number of reasons. And that's a problem. So, like I say, you don't want to get into that situation.
Sorry, all I couldn't help but think of was the name that popped in my head, Eagle Games. but they went under for a totally different reason.
Yes.
But I've actually published a couple of great games that they couldn't capitalize on the successor or market them as well as they'd like. In fact, one game was a really great science fiction. In fact, it was similar to some extent to Twilight Imperium, but it was a big, expensive game. Okay, and that meant that the second game they did had to be a small card game, and neither one of them did poorly, but neither one of them did well enough that they could move forward, and it was a real shame. It was, you know, what they did, though, is they had three good designs. They went with the best two. One happened to be expensive and one was cheap. So, and again, anyways, Daniel, as usual, no hard and fast answers on the best way to go. Hopefully we took that uninteresting email and made it interesting. I love that. Daniel, that is my favorite quote of all time about the show. I think I'm going to start putting that in our press releases from now on. Now, that said, we'd love to hear your feedback and comments. We'd also like to hear your questions, and Rhett is going to tell you how.
Well, you can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. You can phone us at 773-634-9377.
And we have a dedicated RSS feed over at the Purple Pawn, so in case you're missing us in with all the other Purple Pawn news, we are at www.purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed. And that's just the paper money stuff.
I would like to just say I think that's the first time I've gotten that right in about 2 months.
I wasn't going to say anything, but yes, it is. So, all right. Hey, that said, what do we got coming up, Brett? Take us out of here.
Let's see, fourth quarter. It starts in a month. And pretty much the question is everybody ready?
I'm not.
I've never been ready. It's hard to believe fourth quarter starts in a month. I'm sitting here still thinking I should be, you know, putting away my Christmas gifts.
I'm still trying to, assimilate all the Gen Con releases too.
Yeah, well, that's going to go on for a while. I just saw my list of things that are releasing in the next 2 weeks post Gen Con, and still looking for a big list of things that are missing post Gen Con.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm kind of pumped about the new crop of deck building games.
There's going to be a ton of them.
Yes, well, I mean, there's Thunderstone, Ascension. The Graxia game, Guardians of Graxia, is also a deck building game. All of these sound neat.
Not to be confused with Guardians of Graxia, the board game, which has come out simultaneously, and they do look confusingly like one's an expansion to the other.
That's right. That's right. Thank you very much. So it's Heroes of Graxia is the deck building game, and then Guardians is the board game. So yes, important to note. So anyways, our next show is going to be on September 9th, the day after my birthday, by the way. So if anyone would like to send their birthday wishes, you can rewind and listen to how to send us your birthday wishes. And I think that's it for this show, Red.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much covered. So that's it. I'm Red Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark. We'll see you around the gaming news.